This is Peter J. Fisher, and I am living the Peter J. Fisher experience. Happy Sunday, everybody. It is August 4th, 2019, and I just dropped an episode yesterday. However, I'm not going to bombard you. You know, I'm going to let you guys take these two episodes, these back-to-back episodes, and, you know, soak them up, let them marinate, and then I'll be back next week at some point with another episode. However, I know that the majority of my listeners are of a certain intelligence. I also know that, I have a vibe that the majority of my audience are in a state of awakening. And I hope that some of my messages are helping throughout that journey and process, as they are helping me, because as I volunteer the information, it also helps me process the information as well. And this episode is something that is really I don't want to say it's been bugging me or been irking me, but it's so ingrained in our fabric, especially the Western world, the U.S. of A., the greatest nation. it's a philosophy that's been ingrained. And as I become more awake, I realize that, or at least I started to notice this, fairly early in my childhood, being an athlete that played organized sports throughout childhood, I started to notice this phenomena somewhere, I would say, between 9 and 12 years old. This is my opinion. Everybody's entitled to one. Is today's mediocrity equivalent to excellence? Let's get it. Is today's mediocrity equivalent to excellence? That's the question that I pose to the audience. In my opinion, in many ways, it is. It is ingrained in this fabric. And I started to realize it, as I said on the intro, as a youth playing organized sports. I grew up in a really good era, I believe. I grew up not in the sense of the mediocrity becoming excellence, but I'm talking about being able to see different phases of evolution in different aspects of life. I was born in the mid 80s, so I got to enjoy a good part of the 80s as a young toddler / young boy. But the formative years of my childhood was through the 90s. And I'm just going to keep this mostly on a sports level. But I believe if you read between the lines, you can understand where I'm going with the message. But where this, where my mind is taking me right now, I feel like that's the best metaphor for me to explain how I see the mediocrity becoming the standard of excellence. I grew up in an era where, when it came to sports, I saw both ends of the spectrum. You see, playing sports in the 90s, I still got to play. My main sport was baseball, and I still got to play for a lot of those hard ASS. I like to keep my episodes work friendly, safe for work. I got to play for a lot of the hardcore coaches. Coaches that coached and played in eras where, dare I say, men were men and boys were being trained to be men. Even in sports. Because understand, organized sports, I don't know much about organized sports today, but when I was growing up, and I'm pretty sure, not pretty sure, I know for a fact, the generations prior to mine, when you all were growing up playing sports, organized sports prepared you for life. Believe it or not, organized sports prepared you for life, for things that would come at you in the real world. I love organized sports for that. Organized sports probably saved my life and made me the man I am today. Of course, I went through a lot of bumps and bruises throughout the adult years. But I think without organized sports, being in the subconscious mind frame, I wouldn't have known how to maneuver in some of those obstacles. As an African-American young man, dare I say, organized sports has saved a lot of us. And I think that's even true still to today. But this is where things started to change or turn. I would say probably heading into the late 90s into the 2000s. Now we're going to start to enter the era of the millennial. And I'm not a millennial hater. I'm not a technology hater. I use technology. I grew up, once again, I grew up in an excellent era, an excellent generation. Let me tell you why. The beginning of my schooling in the late 80s, early 90s, throughout the 90s. Well, let's start with elementary. So late 80s through early mid 90s, okay? Now, I went to Catholic school, too, in elementary school. This made it even better for the comparison is that I got to see moving through life. And when I look at my kids today, it blows my mind. Now, I'm not saying, like, of course, these kids, they're geniuses because they can do things technologically that we couldn't even imagine at their age. I have a 4 and a 10-year-old. They can do things at 4 and 10 that I couldn't imagine at 4 and 10, okay? That's great. But let me tell you something. Understand and listen to me real closely. I grew up, and you see, the generations, some of the generations before me, this is where, not to say you guys have a disadvantage, because of course, as life evolves, you have to evolve. So a lot of you guys caught on, but it happened a little bit later in your maturation. You see, when the technology boom hit, you might have been in your late 20s. You might have been in your early 30s. Some might have been in their 40s. And so you had to learn the ways of today at a later age where, you know, the brain. Now, see, this is where people get things confused, because don't ever think because you get to a certain age, your brain can't grasp things just as quickly as someone or as yourself when you were younger. You see, as I said in my last episode, the power is in the word and in the thought. If you believe you can do anything at any age, trust me, you can do anything at any age, but that's not for this episode. Stay on task. So check it. I grew up in an era where I remember this vividly. It brings me back. I like this. I remember when I was in fourth and fifth grade, elementary school, Catholic school. In fourth and fifth grade, they had us writing 3 to 5 page essays. You hear me? 3 to 5 page essays at 9 and 10 years old. Here's the kicker. At 9 and 10 years old, you hear what I said? I said they had us writing 3 to 5 page essays. Now, I didn't say typing. They had us writing 3 to 5 page essays. Okay? Hold on. It gets better. So, when it comes to marking these papers, you got some grades for content. You know, you got all kind of different grades, right? That's going to make up for the main grade of this paper. But guess what? Guess what was a major point or a major factor in your grading in these days? You ready for this? Penmanship. Millennials, that word, you might have to look that up. I'm not kidding you. Penmanship, you might have to look that up. You may not even know what that means. It only all it means is being able to write legibly. Speaking of writing legibly, like I've seen people write today. And when I say chicken scratch, when we thought we was writing in chicken scratch growing up in the 80s and 90s, when I tell you some of these kids is writing chicken scratch, it's because they don't have to write. They over here, they on tablets and computers and tablets and phones in school. Can you fathom that, huh? 80s, 90s, 70s, 60s, can you fathom that? I know the 60s and 70s can't fathom that. Now, penmanship was part of the main grade. Now, you got, understand this. At 9 and 10 years old, you sitting down, you reading books, you trying to summarize books without plagiarizing. That's right. 9 and 10 years old, summarizing books without plagiarizing. You gotta put your thoughts together. They gotta be coherent. You gotta come up with a certain amount of information to cover 3 to 5 pages, right? Because you're gonna get marked on whether you hit that criteria or not. Okay? They're gonna tell you whether you can skip lines or not. Huh? Oh, wait a minute. I forgot. In Catholic school back in these days, guess what? Guess how we had to write these papers in cursive. I'm not even gonna lie to you. I can't even write in cursive no more. I'm not even gonna lie to you. I was a cursive pro at 9 and 10 years old, huh? That's a crying shame. When I was my oldest son's age, I could write my butt off in cursive. Now, the only thing I could write in cursive is my name when I'm writing a signature on a receipt or something. That's a crying shame. I don't need cursive no more, other than write my name. I just need to know how to write PETERFISHER. Those are the only letters I need to know in script. You know what I mean? So it's crazy. These kids don't even know how to write in script. They never learned how to. At least I knew. So what that means is in my subconscious mind, there's a program that says script somewhere with cobwebs on it in the archives. But if I had to relearn it, subconsciously, but hold on now. Let me go to the card catalog. Did he say card catalog? Millennials like, what the heck is a card catalog? That was usually found in libraries when we read books. So you see what I'm saying? Now, the subconscious is like, well, let me go to the card catalog and find that book that I put away on how to write a script. And probably in about 21 to 30 days, I could be able to write a script again fluently because I've had that knowledge instilled in me. And I had enough practice for it to become a habit. These kids don't even know how to write a script. They don't even know how to sign their own names because they don't know how to write a script. But why would you need to know how to sign your name when all you gotta do is type it in on a keyboard these days? That's your signature. Your signature is electronic. That's insane. So just to get, that was just a little background on things that just popped into my head growing up in that era. You see, that was the beginning of my schooling. Now check this out. As I got deeper into school, middle school and high school, certain areas of technology started to be introduced. So I got to learn the old school ways and the beginning of the new school ways. That's why I say my generation had it good, man. We had it good because I remember plenty of nights, man, as a young kid, getting you know, staying up late, getting your butt whooped because you waited till the last minute anyway, and then trying to write a 3 to 5 page essay in script. I also remember being up late because you waited till the last minute anyway, but being able to type that 3 to 5 page essay in high school, or 5 to 10 page essay in high school. I remember both of those. They both formulated areas in my life. Wouldn't trade either of them for the world. Let's get back to the meat and potatoes. Let's get back to mediocrity being equivalent to excellence. So I remember playing sports, and somewhere in the late 90s to the early 2000s, we started to see this shift. And it wasn't a shift for the better. And the funny thing is, as a competitor, as a gladiator in the heart, I felt it. Even at that age, 13, 14, 15, 16, you know, because you're a teenager, man. If you're not a gladiator, if you're not a warrior at that age, and you playing organized sports, you might want to find you a hobby. Now, you know what I'm saying? So I remember at these ages, I could feel it. There was something in my heart, in my soul, in my spirit that was like, this ain't right. There came a time when there was no such thing as a loser. You hear what I said? Let me repeat that. There came a time when there was no such thing as a loser. Now, I know to some people, that's excellent. You know, kids shouldn't be labeled as losers. Kids shouldn't be called a loser. You know, as long as you try your best, everybody wins. Wrong. As long as you try your best, everybody wins. Wrong. Let me explain something to you as a grown man now that has lived through that life. And like I said, I could always feel like there was something wrong about that message. Let me explain something to you as you coast through life, because that's what's going to happen. You're going to try to coast through life. Because as long as you try your best, everybody's a winner. Right? Wrong? Not. Now listen, let me explain something to you. This is twofold, two-pronged. It's a two-pronged problem. When your philosophy is one such as that, you degrade the level of hard work and determination that the true winners displayed that whole season. B, you're over accentuating what the mediocre teams did or did not do to be able to beat that team. You may not understand in the sports correlation. You may not understand how that affects these kids growing up. These kids would be my peers now as grown men and women. You may not understand how that affects the macrocosm from that microcosm. But let me break it down a little bit further for you. Let's get into the workspace. As long as you try your best, everyone's a winner, right? But here's the problem. If everyone's a winner and you grew up with that mentality, how do you know? You should know, but if you're disillusioned, how would you know that you're even trying your best? That's A, okay? B, you get a whole group of backsliders that come into a workforce that have gotten by with doing mediocre work because they could come in with their mediocrity and they climb up on the backs of the hard workers, the ones that are sweating and slaving, carrying their weight and the weight of the mediocre. And somehow, when it's time for the work ceremonies and the holiday parties and the this and the that, the mediocre getting the same level of accolades as the people sweating and slaving. Can you see where the correlation is between the sports and the real world? Can you see this? You see, people are going into situations in their lives with this mentality. If I find a good woman or a good man, you know, I'll come in and I look good. I cook good. I clean good, right? I may not be a good person, but as long as I try my best, everybody wins, right? I ask you this. After listening to this episode, if you really take the time to dissect, I would say you probably have to listen to this episode two or three times. Now, I know that might be up to an hour. You might be like, whoa, whoa. And I'm not saying you got to do it in a row. I'm saying maybe a few times this week to really dissect what I was saying. But I ask you, when you listen to this podcast and you break it down, Is that the mentality that you want your sons and daughters to grow up with? Because I told you what the outcome is going to be. Matter of fact, a lot of you see the outcome every day. See, now I think you can probably start to piece it together when you get to work tomorrow on Monday or whatever day you're listening to this the next day. When you get to work and you're looking at some of these cats that's my age and in mid-30s, early 40s, late 20s, and it's like, oh, I think I see what Peter J talking about. He lazy. She lazy. What? You see what I'm saying? You already saw it. You just may not have understood the rationale behind it. We gotta nip that in the bud. We have got to nip that in the bud because you're discrediting the hard worker and the overachiever. And this is detrimental to that person because that person is going to kill themselves because they're going to continue to work harder because they think that they're not getting the respect they deserve. So they continue to grind and grind and grind, and they've already been overgrinding from the beginning. You got people burnt out, 45, 50 years old. Because they've put in 30 years of work and 15 because you let Becky and Tommy and them come up in there when they want, do what they want, not do what they want. As long as they try their best, everybody wins. And you got these people having strokes and heart attacks. Yeah, there's a lot of things that can lead to that as well with health issues. That's not in this episode. We're just talking about the mental and the stress aspect. Oh yeah, a lot of that comes from carrying other people's weight at work, at home, wherever it is. We gotta do better. Not for us, but we gotta do better for our kids and their kids and their kids. You wanna make America great again? I know how y'all feel about that, man. I don't have no words about him. Yo, you want to make America great again? Start rewarding based on performance and capability, and stop rewarding based on as long as everybody tries their best. Everybody wins. Be blessed, everybody.